control him. I couldn't control him either.
Okay.
He was...
Was he CI staff, or had he was he contracted?
I don't know. He was agency.
Yeah, okay.
But when I say agency, I mean staff. Company.
Okay.
But he was a big girl.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, well, let's do your questions,
yeah,
and then we'll run through my stuff.
Okay. First thing I need to know is just where and when you were born.
January 27th, 1923. 27 January 23, I'm just 64 last week.
Okay.
In Denver, Colorado.
In Denver, okay.
Yeah. I was brought up in Denver until through 2 years of high school. Lived in Denver. At which time we moved out of California.
Okay. Glendale.
Glendale, yeah.
Can you give me a little historical background of CIA involvement with Special Branch? Do you know what preceded you? When the CIA assumed that role?
No, I can't. Not really at all. I would assume, and this is sheer guesswork,
mm-hmm.
that this developed in the early 60s, maybe late 50s. The original model for counterinsurgency in Vietnam, I think, came from the British through the Malaysian experience, Sir Robert Thompson. And I'm sure that it was, well, of course, the French also have always had a special branch in the police.
Yeah, there's Sûreté.
Well, that's, no, as a matter of fact, the French don't. It's the British that have a special branch as part of the police,
mm-hmm.
and not the French.
Mm-hmm.
So the model in Vietnam is a British model.
Okay.
And with the special branch being concerned with intelligence,
mm-hmm.
It was the natural civilian agency toward which we would gravitate, mm-hmm. if and when the CIA got interested in the Vietnam problem. So therefore, I think it would be late 50s,
okay.
or early 60s, probably under Colby, that the special branch liaison became significant.
Okay.
Now, basically, the CIA staked out,
mm-hmm.
even in military intelligence around the world, unless there was an active military presence, the CIA staked out clandestine operations as its purview,
mm-hmm.
whether they were run by an army or run by a civilian agency, so that the spy operations, let's say, of the Iranian army, technically were the purview of the CIA. Now, this has resulted in continuing conflict between the U.S. military and the CIA,
well,
which continues to exist.
Yeah, that would be something I'd be interested to discuss. That's
yeah.
certainly one of my questions.
Yeah.
And
what it boils down to is the so-called agreed activities charter, where the military, U.S. military, are permitted to run clandestine operations. But they're subject to review and subject to veto by the CIA. So this is the basic relationship of military intelligence.
Mm.
But civilian intelligence was always claimed exclusively by the CIA.
Okay. When you arrived in Vietnam, was the Special Branch headquarters in the National Police Interrogation Center?
I think it was,
okay.
but I'm not sure on that.
You were not
I've
going
been down,
down
there.
To their headquarters?
No, I had no, okay. I had no liaison responsibilities at the Saigon level with the National Police or the Special Branch. My boss did, Red Stent, Jack Stent, and his predecessor was a man by the name of Paul Hodges. These people, as well as liaison with the CIO, I'd been down to these places for conferences, and we also ran some training programs in agent operations and in supervision and management of intelligence operations for the police. But I cannot say exactly where these things were held. I've been to these places, but I can't affirm. I cannot answer your question categorically.
That's fine. That's fine. When the crew were offered to you,
This would be fall of 1966, summer, fall.
Fall of 66?
66, yes.
Okay. Who would have offered them to you?
John Hart.
On what terms?
Well, the terms were that, and we'll get into that a little bit more lately in connection with the whole reorganization of 1966.
But it is part of the reorganization.
It was one of the options discussed at that time.
Okay.
And this was this offer or suggestion was made in terms of John Hart's dissatisfaction with the PRU operation. Let's say, let's call them what they were at that time, the CTs,
the
counter-terror units, because it was out of these deliberations that the name PRU was generated.
Okay.
They were not called PRU before that.
And these are internal station discussions?
These are internal station discussions.
Yeah, these are not part of
these
the combined campaign.
To do.
Okay.
These have nothing to do with outside agencies. These are purely CIA matters. Okay. John Hart was dissatisfied with the PRU. He was dissatisfied with the image, the reputation that the CTs had acquired.
Okay.
He wanted to turn the PRU, the CTs, into an intelligence arm. And not a paramilitary service. He wanted them for the purpose of capturing prisoners, capturing documents, and going after particular sources of intelligence.
That is how people who are involved in the PRU program after this describe it to me. People who are involved in it before it describe it as paramilitary.
Paramilitary.
So, as counter-terrorist. So, there is obvious, there's a change in direction.
There's a change in
definition
direction.
At some point, and that's just what
this
I was
is,
trying
this
to
This is the point at which the change in direction
And those
made.
Are deliberations in the fall of 66.
Yes.
During that whole year. Okay, very good. Was there, who had the PRU at that, up to that point? Was
well, there were the two developments. There were the two elements in the station. We went through this before, but I think maybe my memory is a little bit better this time than it was last time. I still don't remember the name of what the other one was, but there were the intelligence arm, the intelligence liaison.
This was one part that I was unclear on.
Yeah, okay. There was the intelligence liaison under the so-called liaison branch that dealt with the Vietnamese and with the CIO and the police special branch on questions of intelligence and counterintelligence, counterespionage.
Okay.
I was a component of the liaison branch. I was the field operations.
Okay.
So I managed all the
provinces.
These liaison operations in province, but not in the Saigon Gia Dinh military district.
Okay.
Okay.
That's handled exclusively by Stent.
Or other people.
Okay.
Yeah, there were other people involved. Jack was the boss of all.
Okay.
Across the hall from us were the, we just call them the PN people.
Okay. These were all the other programs that the station was involved in the provinces.
Okay.
These involved so-called revolutionary development, propaganda.
Okay.
The
true.
Of the counter-terror teams.
Yeah.
The census grievance groups.
Okay. Census grievance is not considered intelligence?
No, that was a part of the Revolutionary Development Group. That was part
very
of the. That was part of the PM shop.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
But it was a. It was a. It was basically an intelligence arm undercover as well.
Okay.
But see, these people had to have their own intelligence too.
Okay.
So let's see. You had CT teams. You had census grievance. You had.
And that propaganda is the armed propaganda teams.
You had armed propaganda teams?
Yep.
Okay. And what else? I'm not sure.
Okay.
Well, you had your whole Mountain Yard.
Okay.
Mountain Yard operation, run out of play coup.
Okay. And that's that CIDG, Civilian Irregular Defense Group?
Well, that was CIDG, originally was CIA, but then that was turned over to somebody else.
Special Forces.
Special Forces.
Yes, okay.
But we turn around, we rebuild some new element which replaces what we used to call CIDG.
Okay.
And that was all run by the by this branch across the hall from us.
Okay.
Now the difference was up until the fall of 1966,
mm-hmm.
at which time the regional officers were established. And the Roiks were established following our pattern, the liaison branch police operations in province, namely six regional officers.
Mm-hmm.
Up until that time, the province officers for the PM shop, whatever its name was, I don't know. The province officers for the PM shop came from, worked directly out of Saigon. I mean, here you have 44 provinces, and you have,
you may have
six different province officers doing six different things in PM activities type of thing.
Okay.
We had no single coordinated supervisor in province,
mm-hmm.
nor at region. You had all these, something like, you must have six times 30 is 180. 180 different operations being run out of Saigon, and this is where the guy you talked to already, and I saw him at L'Escargot in December, restaurant, Tom Donahue.
Oh, you did see him?
I did see him,
yeah.
After you talked to him.
Okay.
Tom Donahue was a branch chief there, running this organizational abortion, this mishmash that they
mm-hmm.
call the PM shop. And it was this kind of situation that Hart wanted to straighten out. And the first move was to adopt this regional officer concept from the liaison branch experience.
Okay.
He liked that. And then the second was to establish province officers. So
okay.
that all of the CIA operations in province came under one coordinating mind.
Okay.
This was all fall of 1966. It was a major, major step forward.
Well, it certainly sounds like a massive reorganization.
It was, as far as the field operation was concerned.
Okay.
It was very important. And it was belated. I mean, the fact that it operated on the other basis for as long as it had is almost... I just don't understand.
It seems to me like it's just because people wanted as much autonomy.
It just grew like Topsy, that's all.
Yeah, okay.
It grew like Topsy. Too much money, not enough planning, not enough thought. What are we doing and why are we doing it?
Okay.
And how can we do it better?
Because 66 is that year of massive influx of money. Okay. Maybe this is something you're going to discuss.
Touch on this later, too.
Yeah, good. Pick training teams.
Yeah, okay. This was John Muldoon.
Is that the fellow who had the emphysema that you talked about?
No.
Okay.
No. His name was Gene. I've been trying to remember his last name.
And I forget what he did. I think he was working pigs. But I'm not sure.
Do you know how to spell emphysema?
E-M-P-H-Y-S-E-M-A.
Okay. Good spelling bee word.
Yeah.
But you said you would have more information on that.
On what?
On the pick training team. Was this something that you put together?
No, what I did was I remembered.
You remembered. Okay.
I remembered John Muldoon's name, the fact that we did have a team of people.
And was his team, did it include an Air Force major, a state trooper from New Orleans, and was it basically three people who went around to the different picks?
I have absolutely no idea who those guys were. There were two or three
who went around to each of the picks and would then train and instruct the pick advisor in the operation?
The pick advisor was the province officer.
Okay. That's right.
But, and maybe later, after I left country, maybe they brought in another round eyes to run the run the picks. Although my own directive to the province officers were, you run the picks from a distance. They're a special branch property, a special branch operation, and the Americans are not to be identified in the public mind with the pick.
Right.
Now, that may have gone overboard later. But while I was there, these guys were not to go near the pigs.
On a day-to-day, certainly not to
participate in interrogations there or anything like that.
Yeah, the few I talked to, depending on where they were.
Province officers?
Yes. Would visit a pig once a day on occasion.
Yeah.
Some of them hired other people to actually be at the pick,
right,
and contract people, ex-military sergeants, whatever, police, and I guess because
Vietnamese,
no, Americans.
Americans,
because they had the money.
This is probably
they had the money to do it, and once they would get an okay, it would then they themselves wouldn't have to be there.
Yeah,
and so the idea was to. So that they didn't want to be there, they would hire somebody else to do it.
Yeah. Would you mind giving me the names of those people? I'll tell you. These province officers?
Yeah, okay. But these are people who came in July of 67 out of George Carver's presidentially directed program that began in the spring of 67.
George Carver had nothing to do with that.
Ruth Robertson?
Do you
know that the name Ruth Robertson?
Tell me about this. What's
okay.
Here?
I'm not gonna.
Can I go back on tape now?
Yeah.
Okay. When they're talking about a presidentially directed program in the spring of 1967.
Yeah.
This is Bob Coleman.
Okay.
And this is ISEX.
Yeah. This is ISEX.
Slash Phoenix.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. And yes, at this time they did go over to a massive recruitment of military and other people rather than CIA staffers for these various positions. So everything you say is consistent here.
Okay.
And quite in order, with the exception that any impression you may have had that this originated with George Carver in the White House is not correct.
Okay. I thought it might have been something that came out of this special assistant.
Once again, when I talk, when I go through my notes here, we'll touch on that. The fact that was that the reason I was brought up to Sava after I returned to Washington, mm-hmm. which was George Carver's staff, was because Carver was obliged to brief McNamara and other people on Phoenix, on ISEX / Phoenix.
And he needed somebody who knew about it.
And he didn't have a clue. He called me in and said, please write me some memoranda and do this and that. So I did. That was the reason I went up to Sava's staff in the first place.
Okay.
So Carver may very well have greeted some of these people. I don't know, but perhaps for political reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Carver himself, of course, is nice enough guy, smart, mm-hmm. sharp as a whip. I think somewhat too abrupt and authoritarian, too self-opinionated.
again, I think I mentioned this earlier, that George had earlier provided the theoretical basis for U.S. intervention in Vietnam.
That's right.
In terms of his an article that he had written for Foreign Affairs on the nature of the Vietnam insurgency and American interest there. And so he was PhD, I think he was Yale, I'm not sure.
Yale or Harvard.
And PhD, and he's smart, smart fellow. But I think that maybe one of these people too smart for his own good at times.
Okay.
Certainly at this time, being the media lion that he loves to be.
Yeah.
And which he always did love, as a matter of fact, because he has a nose for high-level contacts, which some people need to have. He's in his glory now when they call him up on and put him on TV for nationwide TV on terrorism.
It's very interesting to me when I sit and watch TV with my wife, and they go from Colby to Carver to somebody else I've talked with. And you know, of course, nobody in the world knows that I talk to these people except me and my wife, and so it's very interesting. She says, "Are they really like that?"
Yeah.
What about John Muldoon?
Okay, back to the pick interrogation train. John Muldoon was the chief of this little group, and they would...
Was he there when you arrived?
Yes, he was there when I arrived, and I think he was there when I left. I'm not sure.
Okay.
He may have been gone by the time... He suffered from high blood pressure. He could... he drank like a fish. And his face would turn scarlet. He was overweight. And he came back after he retired from the agency, went and he set up his own private detective business in Northern Virginia there.
Is he still alive, do you think?
I think he is. There was a John Muldoon that died about 8 or 9 years ago, but as I tracked him down, it was not the same one. I think he's probably still alive. In any event, these fellas would monitor the PIC construction. And they would also work with the province officer on establishing training programs for the translators at the PICs, for the files and collation work, and for the training to provide training to police special branch personnel to be assigned to the PICs as interrogators.
John Muldoon, Security Consultants International.
Probably.
Okay.
You already talked to him?
No, but I was told that he was one of Lucien Conning's best friends.
Could very well be.
So,
I don't think they knew each other then. They may have met over a quart of beer since then and been bosom buddies ever since.
Okay. But he was then CIA, he's not...
Oh, he was CIA staff. Yes, he was staff officer. He was company.
Okay, I think that's enough.
And he had a good program there. I thought he was... everything led me to believe that he was top-notch.
Okay. And, I met a fellow who claims to have become the director of the PIC program in 67 at the time that 44 people came and took over this program. And these...
What was his name?
His name was Robert Slater. He was a Marine captain.
He may have come in as a replacement for Muldoon.
Yeah.
Possible.
He said, this guy...
See,
it's
this is a period of time that...
This is a fantastic overturn.
Yeah, there's this big overturn, and it's right the time that I left, and Jack Stent left, and all of the... All the people there through the big buildup, most of them left. And so that's perfectly possible.
Is a question about PICs.
Yeah.
Why do they look the way they look? Why are they designed in that regard, is that something that is standard? Is there some model that picked buildings were built upon? Did you have anything to do with that?
I didn't have anything to do with that. That would be a question
for Muldoon, then.
Well, not really. Muldoon might know the answer to it. I don't know.
Yeah.
That'd be a question for Paul Hodges and Tucker Googleman.
Incidentally, Leanne had photographs of Tucker, too. Yeah. So it was nice to be able to see that.
She probably has more than I do. I have only one photograph that has Tucker in it.
And Paul Hodges?
He was a CIA staffer.
Right.
His predecessor. He was chief of liaison branch.
All right.
Predecessor to Jack Stent.
Okay.
Now, he's the one that actually, under which the PIC program actually started, got off the ground. And as I said earlier last time, that maybe 7 or 8 picks had been built by the time I got there. I finished the rest of them. They were under that was part of my program.
Okay.
They were done, I don't know anything about the design other than it was strictly functional.
Okay.
And the same pick in every province was simply for economic reasons.
Okay.
And cheapness of construction.
Okay.
Standardization, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And
functional seems to be the word that sums it up best. Okay. What would have Jack Stent, was he there when you arrived, or did he come, and was Paul Hodges there, and then Stent?
No.
Was there
Jack and I? When I volunteered to go to Vietnam, Jack was the guy I was sent to talk to here in Washington.
Okay.
He was on his way out there. He preceded me in Saigon by perhaps 2 months.
Okay. And could you, in a sentence or two, describe what his job was?
He's the chief of liaison branch.
Okay. So he would have been talking with General Loyan.
He was General Loyan's contact.
Okay.
And a number of other of the top police people and special branch people.
Okay. And
the deputy was a man by the name of Ed Welch.
Okay. Not John Welch.
No, Ed Welch.
Is there a John Welch too?
Not to my knowledge. I don't know.
Because this guy Ed Daly was staying with Ed Regan was staying with a man named Welch.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Okay. And Howard Stone, would he have been Jack Stent's boss and as chief of intelligence in...
Yes.
Okay. That was... But he would have nothing... Stone or Stent would have nothing to do with PM, paramilitary operations. That would be
exactly
the other side.
Exactly.
Okay. When does the Ray Valentine incident occur? You finding out his problem. And second part to that question is that the incident that prompts your reporting system?
No, that has nothing to do with my reporting system.
Okay.
My reporting system, I installed that two months of the time I got out.
And you, okay. Had nothing at all to do with failures?
There was no connection whatsoever.
Okay.
The basic proposition of the reporting system was that people have to know what they're responsible for.
Okay.
Same as a fitness report system. People have to know what they're going to be rated on. So the reporting system is based on that same idea.
Okay. And Ray Valentine is just an example.
Ray Valentine is what? Did you see? Top Copy? Did you ever see that picture?
Yeah, sure. Melina McCoury.
Yeah, and Peter Ustinov.
Yeah, very good.
Boil on the arse end of history or something.
Okay.
That's all Ray Valentine is. He has nothing to do with anything.
Okay.
Except as an example of the stresses that a guy was under and what could happen to a man.
Okay. Okay.
And in fact, we had to suddenly realize that he was operating in certain situations in a condition.
On the other hand, there were people who were conducting their duties in a highly effective and laudatory manner, and very professionally.
Yes.
Which is probably more the case than he'd be in the exception, and these other people.
Yeah, he was
doing a good job.
He was an exception. Yeah. Okay. But there was another one. We had an alcoholic up there in Ico.
There's so much alcoholism.
And there were a bunch of guys that were alcoholics before they ever sent out to Vietnam.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And one of them, as a matter of fact, I got my ass in a jam because we had to fill, I forget his first name, his last name was Ross. And as I recall, John Hart finally sent him home. Washington came in for a justification of this thing. And so Hart gave it to me to write.
Yeah.
Since the guy had worked for me initially.
Yeah.
I wrote this thing. I wrote about a 7-page, very detailed discussion of the case, of the entire history in country, and this and that. And the bottom line was that headquarters should have known better than to send an alcoholic out in the first place.
Uh-huh.
Little did I know that this guy's assignment to Vietnam had been directed by his personal friend, Tom Karamanidis.
Yeah, okay.
Who was the deputy director for plans.
Yeah. Mm.
And so this Intellifax, or whatever they call these things, where you send a dispatch over cable communication traffic to China, hit headquarters like a blizzard. It's very rare for people to call a spade in our business, any business.
Mm-hmm. Especially when it's so ultra-political.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been known as a person to call a spade. This is one of the reasons I was always so controversial.
Mm-hmm.
And I called a spade in this damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard about it later.
Yeah.
But that was Ross was his first name, Collins, Ross Collins. That was his name.
Did you have, you were first deputy for a couple of months, then Tucker.
To Tucker.
Right,
yes.
And then Tucker left, and you became Chief of Field Operations.
Yes.
Did you have a deputy or a staff?
Yes, I had. I brought a deputy in from Providence. And there were several different guys at different times.
Okay.
Jack Horgan was my deputy at first. And he went up to Da Nang.
Okay.
A guy by the name of Don Cornelius. Another guy by the name of Dick Jaspers. Some others.
Okay.
We had two secretaries in there.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, there was Muldoon and his group. They were part of my staff.
Okay.
There was a little black guy, very nice fellow. He was a logistics kind of guy and worked with contractors and so on.
Would that have been Pacific Architects and Engineers, Vietnamese?
I don't know. We had all the PIC construction was done by Vietnamese firms.
Okay. Including the design?
No, I wasn't there.
Yeah, okay.
Did
you know Dang Van Minh, the special branch director, Vietnamese, Dang Van Minh?
Okay. I met him. I had lunch with him.
Okay. I interviewed him.
Yeah. Okay.
Before I had interviewed you, but yeah.
Stent would have luncheons, for example.
Yeah.
I would sit in on some of those.
Not all on. He was a very nice man, incidentally.
Yeah.
Very, very intelligent. And one of the things he told me is, well, I'll get to that. As a matter of fact, this is the next question. Why do you write, and here I might be jumping a little bit ahead, attack on BCI? On November 22nd, you present the document, Attack on the BCI. What was the reason for writing it?
Well, as you brought to recall, the fact that we just finished up, what was it, combined campaign plan or something like that? Or was it the Jacobson report, which?
Okay. Roles and missions.
Roles and
recommended.
Missions.
And this was a kind of special out of Pentagon papers. This is really getting to the crux of what I gotta get done.
Yeah.
Special branch got the job of had the quote down. Well, without getting into the exact wording, it said that Special Branch would take over the role of the attack against the VCI.
Mm-hmm.
MACV, there were 80 proposals, 67 of them were accepted, mm-hmm. six were hassled over.
Mm-hmm.
The six were, this was one of the six, and according to the Pentagon Papers, it's ISECS
mm-hmm.
that resolves the conflict between the military and the CIA over who would have responsibility for the attack on the VCI. CIA recommended that Special Branch would have its primary responsibility and be the sole agency to carry out the attack on the VCI.
But that's not a recommendation of the Roles and Missions Study.
Yes, it was.
There was no ISECS at that time.
Right, and then, but it's a recommendation that Special Branch have as its primary responsibility the attack on VCI.
Okay, okay.
And then ISECS is the solution to the hassle between the military.
Okay.
And I think what it is that CIA has overall supervision and military provides the people.
Well, no, it wasn't that clear cut. I mean, that is just the fact is I sat in on that roles and missions thing. The fact that it had a special branch in there and that position was on account of me.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to know. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that was what we thought was our business.
Yep.
Now, you see, there was something else going on along all this time, and that was the battle over the PFF.
Okay, yep.
And I sat in on that interagency conference.
Yep, well, that's...
I was a station representative for that one.
Mm-hmm.
But the basic proposition involved in all of this
mm-hmm.
was that someday, we were all maybe being optimistic or something, I don't know. Someday we foresaw an end to this war when the Army would not be there.
That's right.
Or that there would be a treaty relationship with North Vietnam
mm-hmm.
In which the military were restricted in their roles.
Mm-hmm. And who's going to control the military?
And therefore we could not wait until the armistice to try to turn over something like a police field force to the civilians after the Army had been running them all these years.
Okay.
Because the Army was dead set on developing a militarily directed gendarmerie in country,
mm-hmm.
which would be under their control, it would be a civilian force. They were absolutely set on this, and this resulted in some real. As a matter of fact, we finally brainwashed the colonel that was the Army representative on this. Committee. And so the final report on the PFF came up recommending civilian management and blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
And so that report had to go around to the agencies for coordination.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that disappeared into MACV, otherwise known as Disneyland West.
Yeah, okay.
That disappeared into Disneyland West, and by golly, we could never recover it. I mean, the Army was simply going to deep six it.
Yeah.
And we finally did, John Monopoly and I, as I recall, we finally did manage to pry it out of the MACV and to get some sort of grudging consent from Westmoreland that it would remain a civilian agency, which it did.
Right.
Okay. Now, the same thing with respect to the attack on the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And this was, again, a lesson from the British experience, that it ultimately was going to be a civilian police problem.
Okay.
An army problem in terms of armed units and this and that, but a police problem. And that, therefore, we should not wait until the end of the war to letting the military run everything until then, and then everything fall into chaos when the military was pulled out.
Okay. So the military is resisting the special branch taking over this simply as a matter of its own self-interest?
Well, self-interest. I mean, first of all, military I don't think they ever understood what VCI was.
Okay.
And the guy we were dealing with was not very smart.
Is this the colonel you're talking about?
No, this is General McChristian.
Okay. That's one of my questions.
He was a general because he married Van Fleet's daughter, four-star general's daughter.
Okay.
And he really did a job on Westmoreland in the CBS trial. That son of a bitch.
Okay.
McChristian was a problem. He was a problem for the military, and he was a problem for us.
Well, he figures, I have a couple of questions about him this go around.
I probably won't be able to answer, but I'll try. I mean, if I do know the answer, I'll tell you.
Well, then, back to why you wrote Attack Against the VCI.
Why I wrote Attack Against the VCI, as I recall, it was roles and missions and whatever that other study was, combined campaign plan and so forth, that we had generated. As a matter of fact, the station arranged for me to make a briefing of General Westmoreland. See, the military, for all of our efforts, were almost totally unaware of the intelligence resources of the police.
Okay.
And we'll come to that also in some of my notes.
Okay.
So Rocky Stone, arranged for me to give an hour's briefing, have an hour's time with General Westmoreland.
This is not Howard Stone?
It's Howard Stone,
oh, okay,
yeah.
Howard is Rocky.
His nickname was Rocky and mine was Brick.
Okay.
And one of the lamer jokes circulating around the agency was that they finally determined that U.S. government, CIA, was interested in winning the Vietnam War when they start throwing rocks and bricks at the VCI. So, as I say, it was one of the lamer ones, but it did circulate. So this was done. Basically, I suppose, as a briefing paper.
Okay.
Now, I did not use it as a briefing paper for Westmoreland, but all of this had generated a lot of interest in VCI and in the attack on the infrastructure, and so that paper was simply written to pull together. Now, I think there's a page missing from that, and I have a copy of it in the other room for you.
Good.
I think there's another page that's not there because it doesn't tell the whole story and it's not totally comprehensive, but it's pretty good. I mean, it gives the intelligence sources and it talks about the intelligence sources and it talks about the reaction forces.
Okay, so Stone arranged for you to give a briefing, and perhaps you wrote Attack Against the VCI
they're separate but related. They're separate. There are two things that happened about the same time.
Okay, and the second thing that.
But
happened.
I didn't write that in connection with the briefing of Westmoreland.
What was the purpose then for writing it?
Just general interest, and people want
just
to know what
general
the,
interest.
What the
okay.
attack? What do you mean when you say attack on the VC infrastructure?
Okay. Okay.
And this would have been
something that Stone would have asked you to do.
No,
is this something
no.
you did on your
something as I recall, I just did it.
Okay,
yeah.
Very good. What do you know about Kung Tak 4? Does that ring a bell? Kung Tak 4? Part of Operation Fairfax.
Operation Fairfax? Is that not
okay. Here's what.
What's that? MR4?
Yes,
operation?
Yes, it was anti-VC supposedly
was
a program created by General Luan.
Yeah.
What
are the dates?
Conceived in the summer of 66 by General Luan to involve combining intelligence activities. Now, supposedly McChristian sent two or three military intelligence people, and your branch sent Telly A. Campora.
Yeah. Okay.
And those people worked with Luan in this, with Operation Fairfax being the search and cordon, and them being the ones who
Did you get a John Tregellian in there? Did you get that name?
No. Can you give me a spelling?
Tregellian. Okay. He was a province officer for Jardin province at that time.
Okay.
As I recall, now I get a little mixed up in my mind.
And Jardin is the focus of it. Saigon, Jardin, and some of
That's in the, no, I don't think it's on the November.
And it's all part of the McChristian Combined Intelligence Center development at that time.
Yeah, that's just mentioned here. A special task force is organized to launch a combined intelligence police-military assault against MR4, Saigon, Chol, and Jardin Special Zone Committee headquarters and base area.
Very good. Fantastic.
Now,
fantastic. Okay.
Now, as I say, this memorandum, there was a page 5.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea where it is.
But that does address...
It simply mentions it.
Yeah, okay.
Simply mentions it as an effort to... I think that the count we made was something like 22 separate intelligence operations.
And this was an attempt to bring them all into...
It was a Chinese fire drill. It was a gang fuck if there ever was one.
Okay.
And it didn't work.
Okay.
Because we had so many violently conflicting interests involved in this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not the least being that it had McChristian's personal attention.
Okay.
And that's always death on anything. When high-level figures decide to give their personal attention to something, that's sinning. He's going to kill it. But that's just a personal opinion here.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that that's addressed because according to Dang Van Min, Feng Huang is a name that he applies to these combined intelligence operations because Feng, the PH, and the Huang, the two words combined, form a Vietnamese word, which means combination. And that they're using the term Feng Huang from 66 through 67, and it's not until long after, that the term Feng Huang is created in 66 and used within that small group, and it's not until 67 that somebody catches on to it and says, Feng Huang, well, what is it? And somebody says, it's a bird. And so, somebody else makes the jump, well, phoenix. But that Feng Huang, the term, came from the word combination.
Could very well be
so,
true.
Which is very,
it gives you more history on the origin of the Phoenix title.
Right, but it's not anything substantive.
That the fact that, in my knowledge, it had originated from the Vietnamese special branch of the Vietnamese police people up in I Corps, and that it was relayed down to us from Jack Morgan. But it
The word phoenix is relayed back then.
Yes, that's right.
But the word Feng Huang had simply worked its way up from Saigon up to I Corps.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that nobody ever made the bird rising out of the ashes connection
right
there in Saigon. Yeah, it's perfectly
That's just a little side
light on
how it got started. Okay.